Driving it home with Patty Vasquez, Patty Vasquez.
From global conflicts to greenhouse gases, the folks refusing to wear masks says, and politicians getting caught grabbing asses says, she's driving it home with Patty Vasquez.
Hello, hello. Happy Friday. We made it to Friday, everybody. Unless, as Joan often says, if this is the beginning of your work weekend, we empathize and wish you the very best as you take on customers or work, whatever you do over the weekend. I feel you because I've been you. And anyway, it's Friday. Of course, we woke up to snow today because the new normal here is we have summer in winter, winter in spring. If there was a blizzard during a tornado, none of us would be surprised. I'd be like, yeah, that sounds about right. There are so many great points that I want to get to at some point that Marcia Halpern was talking about during her show. Just so many issues. And of course, the one that is loudest in my mind is a conversation that they were having about Latino voters. And it's something that we talk about quite a bit and maybe not as focused and as specific, but that the issues that are so important to the Latino community are important. Are what, like our friends from Union Proud Warriors, they talk about, let's let go of the responding every time to the cultural wars and talk about what's important. Do you make enough money to support yourself and your family and live in a way that is comfortable and know that you can retire comfortably, right? Provide education, healthcare for your kids. And that those were the issues that her guests were talking about is work, jobs, right? And not just any job or multiple jobs, but a job where you're earning and doing meaningful work that is reflected in your paycheck. They also talk about education and healthcare and immigration does have an emotional reaction from us. You know, when we talk about SB4 in Texas, the efforts to become a show me your papers state. The first thing I think of, look, this happened in Arizona years ago, and a lot of the elements of that legislation was struck down by the Supreme Court. I doubt that we would be as fortunate in this scenario with this makeup of the bench, but a lot of it was struck down. And what was happening was work with this kind of legislation, meaning that anyone in law enforcement can require that you show your papers if you are suspected of being in a country illegally. What are the elements of someone looking like they're here illegally? And we're seeing this play out on television with Fox News when they focus on someone who looks like they're an illegal or the illegals are beating somebody up when they ended up being residents of New York and New Jersey, some of them. And right, that should be like that video should be enough to go. Those were people that were here legally, and you put them on television, amplified it, made them targets. That's going to happen. That happened when Arizona did this, and I remember I was doing more clubs and traveling, doing comedy, and I talked about how look, my mom came here in 1968. I even telling you this story, I'm so annoyed because I shouldn't have to tell you any of these stories, like. Why the elements of being suspected of being here illegally? What are they? I just want to know what are the elements of someone being suspected of being here illegally? Because the ones that jump to mind are that you look like my mom and that you speak Spanish. You're dark skinned. You have an accent. I mean, what could someone tell me that supports SB4 in Texas? There's a show me your paper state. Aside from seeing someone cross at a point along our border. Perhaps, and there are people stationed there, but what they're calling for an SB4 is anywhere in the state, no matter how far away they are from the border. God, I didn't even know I was going to talk about SB4. There's so many things happening in the news. I don't know how to get to everything. There's so many things happened today. So before we get to all the news, because I promised myself I would start with gratitude today, I want to thank everyone who joined us last night for the Going Home Coalition comedy fundraiser. Tina Fermel, Pamela Schuler, and I had the pleasure of performing last night. It was a virtual comedy show. And I have to tell you, I've done hundreds, and I hope my friends from virtualcomedyshow.com aren't listening. But it was for an event. It was a very specific audience in general. Can you say something specific and in general at the same time? I don't think that's appropriate. Anyway, it made sense in my head. But we had an audience that supports those of us who either care for or are disabled in our community. And the show was, it was so good. It was one of the best virtual shows I've had the pleasure of being a part of. And I've been a part of a lot of great ones. So my friends who are on virtual comedy show, I don't want you to have any hurt feelings, but it was a wonderful show. So thank you. And I believe there are plans to do another one. And it was a blast. We had like one. What I love about the virtual shows is that like right now we're live streaming on Facebook Live and Twitter. And hi, everybody. Do I need to move this a little bit or is that let's tweak it that way a little bit. Hello. We live stream, but I can't see you. And I do kind of love on a virtual comedy show that we can see everyone. And one of the screens was a room full of special education teachers. And that was just lovely. So we had a blast doing that. Also want to thank our friends at Kids Above All. We had an appreciation day for the folks who do the great work there. I want to thank Soli Santos and Anthony Fuentes and Calvin Evans for performing for that group today. It was just a great event, and everyone was very happy. And while I was working during the day and doing comedy and listening to all the conversations and the news, I don't even know. Honestly, I don't know where to begin because I woke up with snow, and that was jarring, even though we knew it was coming and we know how crazy it is here. And I'm going to go on the record right now. And Paul, you can mark it. Let me turn your mic on, and you can verify that I am assuming responsibility. I put away all of my winter clothes, my snow boots. I put away all my winter gear. I have a couple scarves just to wear flip flops once in a while. So do you think that I justifiably am responsible for the return of snow?
No, you're not responsible, but you should know better as a Chicagoan and a Midwestern. That
I jinxed us.
If it's like not even like May 30th, I think it's a good time to put away all that stuff.
You're not wrong. I remember playing when I was in high school and I played softball. I remember standing out in center field getting just coated in snow. So you're not wrong. Yeah, you're right.
I recall like Memorial Days where I'm like wearing a jacket playing basketball outside, like a thick winter jacket. Yeah. So, I mean, it's hit or miss. I know we've had March that, you know, earlier, but I think 2 weeks ago I was saying to my neighbor how great the weather was. And now I'm shoveling snow out of my driveway today.
Yeah. Yeah, if you put your snow brushes away, folks, and you haven't left your house yet and your car's been out there all day, you're going to need your snow brush. I'm just saying. Sorry about that. I jinxed. I take responsibility for jinxing the city, though. It's my second time. I told people last month not to put their stuff away because I have been blamed for snowstorms in Chicago because I put away all my winter gear. Let's take a break here when we come back. All right, let's get there. So much. Like I said, first of all, it's just snow. It's snow. And then, okay, what's happening? Okay, you know what? I need to take a break just to get a list of Trump somehow getting the money because the RNC is going to go bankrupt doing it. Trader Green wants Speaker Johnson out, which we're not surprised by, but yet, hello, we've just over the weekend to pass a budget. What else do we have? Princess Kate Middleton shared a video today, and I did not jump on the. I mean, there were some parts of it that were compelling and weird. I'm glad I did not post any sort of taunting. And and maybe people feel like they were jerks for mocking the whole situation. Were you in on the Where's Kate Gate?
I was concerned, but I wasn't like joking about it because I figured if they're not saying something, then something serious is going on.
Right.
So, it was sad to hear that she's going through cancer treatment, but I hope she's okay.
Yes.
And what type of cancer?
So, they said during her abdominal surgery that was when they discovered this. But I don't know that they were specific about it.
Anytime you hear chemotherapy involved,
that means it's never, not.
I right. mean, it's you can recover, but it's not a good thing when you hear about that.
Yeah, and here's I just think they handled the PR so badly, though. I mean, it lured people into speculation and then mockery, and
You would think the royal family would be used to the hounds of the tabloid journalism in Britain to at least say something quickly. But I didn't follow it that closely to know if they even said anything. So
right. Yeah. It's very strange.
I mean, so people know I'm a big sports fan, and I know that's not really a parallel. But I think when times where you need the leader of something to kind of come out and say something just to quell everyone. Currently, baseball has a gambling issue right now. You hear about Shohei Ohtani?
His translator was taking a bunch of money and
They're calling it theft, but there's two financial transactions that his name is on, Shohei Ohtani, where he sent money to pay off the debt. So he's claiming that's a theft, or his lawyers are. But meanwhile, Major League Baseball could at least send their commissioner out and say, hey, we're investigating it. But I haven't heard anything like that. So it's the same with the royal family, where we could have at least had someone come out and say something. But, of course, it doesn't even help with the king currently going through
cancer.
So,
yeah, that's a lot going on. Yeah, it was very strange, the whole thing. And then, okay, let's see what else. And then the RNC is going to put up the money for all of Trump's legal issues.
Is that even legal?
Apparently, yeah, I believe so. I mean, I don't know. I guess.
Money well spent, I guess, if you're a Republican. I mean,
I only know that because, one, I have a PAC. I have a political action committee. I mean, I ran for office, so I still have that money that I use for 501c3. Like, I donate money to different organizations and candidates that I support. And because there are so many people in Illinois that are under investigation for things, that I learned that they can use their money for legal. But I thought it was only if it was politically related, but maybe because they can. I don't know.
I've learned that with enough lawyers, you can get away with a lot of things. If you get enough money and enough lawyers.
There you go. That's the money and the lawyers. So, yeah, they're going to. Can you imagine being a Republican candidate who's in a vulnerable district, and now you know that, like, whatever possibility you had at getting some of that money is going to all to Trump. And then if he loses, I mean, like, this is bizarre. $500 million.
Yeah.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
But he's apparently good for it, I thought.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's good. Clearly he's good for it. Oh, my God. That's just a few of the things. What else was in the... I'm sure I'm missing something.
Marjorie Taylor Greene is trying to oust Mike Johnson.
Yeah,
so
that's
we're
a
kickstarting
lot.
That. I forgot which Republican congressman said
anything
about... You know, Hakeem Jeffries and his ilk shouldn't pull any stunts this time around. And it's like, hey, you know, why don't you clean your kitchen before you start telling me how to clean mine?
Well, and plus, Andy messaged me earlier. Is it Gallagher? There's another congressman that's retired and going to step down early. And there's something crazy about, like, they're not going to, because of where his seat is in Wisconsin, like, that seat's going to remain empty. So I thought that they only had a margin of one at the, or was it two?
Oh, no, it's a few, but I forgot how someone explained this like a week ago,
how it
doesn't really work out for them. But yeah, it's a slim margin. It's getting slimmer. And to pull, and Marjorie Taylor Greene's got to realize the political implications of what she's trying to pull off. But at the same time, this particular Congress with this particular Republican majority said that they wanted this rule where one vote can kickstart the way to oust the Speaker of the House. So it's kind of on them.
Right.
You know, so the audacity to say that, oh, the Democrats better play ball this time.
Yeah.
It's like, sure. All right.
Good luck with that. Yeah. Yeah. And I think they just have the rest of the weekend to come up with a budget before they have. I'm sure they'll have another. What do they call it? Some sort of, what's a CR? It's,
oh gosh.
Yeah, I can't remember.
It's slipping me. I do
continuing
remember
resolution.
We were talking about the government shutdown. Yeah. I remember we were talking about all this stuff.
But what I'd like to know, because when we had a budget impasse, right, it doesn't, just because you don't have a budget doesn't mean you're not spending the money. The problem is when you don't have a budget, you're actually not able to manage that money as frugally or as efficiently as you should be, because now you're just like paying all the bills as they come because it hasn't been budgeted. So some things that are essential and must be paid will just get paid. It's a mess.
I guess it kind of reminds me when Bruce Rauner was governor of Illinois.
Yeah, exactly.
And, I mean, you recall this, that, like, there's no budget passed for, I think, a couple of years.
Yep.
So and you knew that affected, you know,
directly. Education
and other services. So I don't know. Are there any parallels? I know we're talking about a federal budget, but.
What happens, so whenever they do this, it usually costs several billion dollars because you have to suspend all different kinds of programs. And then you have to play catch up with the things that you weren't doing when the government was shut down as well. Yeah, so it's not. Either way, it's a mess. I actually probably should have checked in with Quigley's team to see if he could call us and let us know what's happening. Well, it's too late now. I should have done that earlier. All right, let's take a break.
5 o'clock on a Friday, I'm sure they'd love being called around.
Yeah,
then.
I think they're in chamber. I think that they're in the Capitol because of all this chaos.
Oh, okay. They're in session.
They're in session. Yeah, they got stuff to do. Let's take a quick break here. Let's open up the phone lines so we see what's on folks' mind. I'm sure I missed some. There was something else. I meant to make a list, and I tried making a mental list, and here I am not remembering it. More in a moment on WCPT 820 Heartland Signal. Phone lines are open, 773-763-9278. You can text to the same number. More in a moment.
Hi, folks. I'm Kirk Bankstead from the Minocqua Brewing Company, and I sell Choice Hard Seltzer, an all-natural grapefruit and lime-flavored booze that you can enjoy for only 100 calories a can. A percentage of the proceeds of each can sold goes to reproductive rights groups in the Chicagoland area. Enjoy a light, refreshing hard seltzer and support reproductive freedom at the same time.
Now available at Provisions Uptown Chicago and R&J Wine and Spirits in Glenview, as well as Eastside Cafe, Coffee and Wine Bar in East Dundee, where Kate is serving up smiles. And drink responsibly.
Patty Vasquez is taking your calls now at 773-763-9278. Driving it home with Patty Vasquez now on WCPT 820.
I'm going to take all of the phone calls. Let me also first catch up on a few of the texts. Raina says, you think that Don the Con bought a Mega Millions tickets? I'm going to take your chances somewhere. Jill and Evans says, I thought the old budget continues, which is last one, Pelosi. Is that what it is? Maybe it's a percentage of funding. Yeah, maybe that's why it's a continuing resolution. And they're like, well, we'll catch up when we catch up. From the 312, hey, Patty, I came out of the grocery store and realized I had not used my snow brush for my car all year. So March 22nd, 2024 is the first time I've used my snow brush for my car all year. Yeah, I'm telling you, it's that kind of day. And we have this one. Are you guys taking calls? Roosevelt, that's from you. And here you are on the phone. So yes, we are. Hey, Roosevelt, how you doing?
Hey, Patty. Hey, how are you feeling, my dear?
So much better. Thank you for asking. For folks who don't know.
You sound better. You sound like you.
Yeah.
You re-energized and you're full of, you know.
Thank you.
You're back to the old Patty.
It was that was the biggest thing for me was the fatigue, I think, and I had a pretty significant headache last night when waking up this morning, but so I'm still feeling that a little bit. But I've tested negative twice in the last 24 hours, and I feel good. I don't have any fever or chills. I think the stress of it just made me clench my jaw, and I think that's why I have a headache, and that's it.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? I figured maybe you would take an extra day off because yesterday it was announced, and I don't know how you missed it. I thought you would spend another day in celebration that Trump is choosing a Latino for Vice President, Marco Rubio.
Oh, wait a minute. What? No, I think he's thinking about it. Did he pick him?
No, I'm saying, he's thinking of picking him. Yeah. But Marco Rubio you got to check out all the stuff that's on the internet. He says it would be an honor, Marco Rubio said it would be an honor to serve under Trump. And then I've been catching up on all the insults that they from 2016. Oh, my God, there's so many bad ones. I mean, at each other, they get to the private parts and everything and the size of ears, Oh, my, I didn't know that so many of them existed on, going back and forth between Trump and Marco Rubio as far as insults. So,
they got nasty. Yeah. That's what always fascinates
me. That's what I'm saying.
What?
Yeah, and you know what's funny? You know what's funny? This reminds me, remember when Trump was looking for a judge and he chose that lady, I can't think of the lady that is in the Supreme Court now, the one he picked?
Amy Coney Barrett.
Oh, what's her name?
Amy Coney Barrett.
Yeah. All right. But prior to that, he went down to Florida as president. He went down to Florida and he said he was going to pick a Cuban-American judge. Remember that? He dangled that carrot to the Cuban-Americans that are all just dying to serve under him. And they just, they just eat it up. Remember that judge? I can't think of that judge, Cuban-American, that he was for a week. He said he was going to pick her as for a Supreme Court judge. And he just dangled that carrot, dangled it, and they were so enamored by him in Florida when he did that.
To your
Barbara
point,
Lagoa.
What was the name?
Barbara Lagoa.
Oh, poor Barbara. She got chipped. Well, here, this when you were talking about that, as far as a Latino judge, do you remember when he had a Mexican judge? Because there was with the border wall in Mexico, Trump said that this judge could not be fair because he was Mexican. Gonzalo Curiel. I'm looking at
there. Oh, yeah. I can't think of the guy's name. Yeah, because he was Mexican. He couldn't do his job. I remember that. But this thing is, he's dangling. He's doing this all over again. He has a, And he does it to everybody. He does it to he did it to Pence with the evangelist. He does it to the evangelist. He dangles these carrots to them, and they just fall for it every single time. You know, so I just wanted to bring that to your attention. As far as Marco Rubio, Marco Rubio is such a hypocrite; it is ridiculous, and he's such a bootlicker. I swear. It's ridiculous. And people that fall for this, and they are, but wait a minute, what am I talking about? The Republican Party fell for it, too, come to think of it, because look at the Civil War. I don't think you covered that either. Well, maybe you did cover it. Marjorie Taylor Greene wants to oust Johnson.
Yep.
No, the Speaker.
Yeah, complete chaos.
The whole world is going crazy when it comes. Yeah, there's a mini civil war, a major civil war among the Republican Party, because now you got Adam Kinzinger saying that if Marjorie Taylor Greene wants to do that, then Johnson should just get with the Democrats, and so he doesn't lose his seat. Because who knows what's going to happen when it comes down to Marjorie Taylor Greene. But I don't think she cleared it with Trump to oust Mike Johnson. So I don't know. There's something going on.
I agree. Yeah. Well, you know, we often talk about, you know, the Republicans fall in line, liberals fall in love, right? That we need someone that will really, because we're kind of like herding cats. We have so many different things, and we get into the weeds about policy and things like that. The problem with a party that only falls in line is that when you're out of line, like, it is, you know, it implodes, because that disrupts the entire structure of their, like, somewhat authoritarian, you know, sort of model. So I think it's part of what, don't you think it's part of why they have in chaos?
Here, let me back up to my original thing about Marco Rubio. The thing is, that's disgusting. I don't know how you feel. The thing that is disgusting to me is Marco Rubio chooses to be a Latino when it's his political benefit. He chooses to speak Spanish when it's to his political benefit. And that, to me, is disgusting, because, you know, now you think of us as Latinos. Now you want us to support you, or to think of you as somebody that is going to represent us. And you know who does that garbage a lot? Univision, that channel. Because when it comes to the elections, doesn't matter if it's a Republican, independent, or a Democratic candidate, they always make a big deal out of the fact that they're Latinos. And they include these. You know what I'm going to say? A-H, whatever. Anyway, they include these guys from Florida, and they're nowhere near Latinos. They represent the worst in the Republican Party, and they just happen to be Latino when it's to benefit their political gain.
Right, yeah.
So I think that's disgusting. Marco Rubio.
It's not even pandering. It's just right. It's just two-faced. It's conniving. By the way, I know that you watch a lot of Latino and listen to a lot of Latino Spanish speaking radio and news. Did you see this report earlier this week from Pew Research that more than 54% of U.S. born Latinos prefer to get their information in English now? Which I think is going to be interesting going forward.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. Which, you know,
no,
in Chicago.
I didn't, but you know what?
Go ahead. No, you go ahead. No,
it doesn't surprise me. Now, it doesn't surprise me, because I'll tell you what. Today, as a matter of fact, today, on a Spanish station that I listen to, on that particular show that I listen to, which is a 2-hour show, just like yours, they happen to get information. I don't know where they're getting it. But they're getting, like you said, and it's surprising how many people call up and they actually know what the heck is going on when it comes down to not only politics, but politics in the United States, but politics in Mexico. And they're very, very knowledgeable, some of them. Mm-hmm. Others, I think, are listening and watching Fox News, because they repeat the same word for word, but only in Spanish, the stuff that is shown on Fox News. And today I got a compliment. Believe it or not, they devised Now, sure, I'm surprised you haven't done it yet with me. They devised a way of not keeping me on the air too long, so they ring a bell because of me, because I was going overboard, spending too much time. There is the bell.
What do you mean? They sent the bell over.
And it sounds just like it. It sounds
well,
like it.
To your point.
They ain't ready, but yes. Let me close.
Okay. Oh, no. Let me
just say this.
Maybe that's why they gave you a bell, because they're like, in closing, anybody who starts going, let me leave you with this. I'm going to be in. I'm just teasing you. But I see their point. But I at some point, I do want to bring in something where we have a like 20 seconds, because sometimes there are listeners who like it was a sort of lecture rather than have a conversation. Here we're having a conversation and back and forth. But I think that if people want to do a lecture or a monologue, I have to like just give them 40 seconds and then we're out, or 20 seconds and then we're out. Do you know what I mean? Maybe that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah. Give me 20 seconds. I'm going to tell you one thing.
Okay. Timer's going.
I had a person today telling the lady that in charge of the show to give me more time because what I say on the air helps them because they don't hear it from nobody else in Spanish or English. So I got a compliment today. In other words, they wanted to throw the bell away. In other words, they want me to spend more time. It's ridiculous.
<You're 20.
laughs> So
that's a great.
It's ridiculous.
Congratulations on that. Thank you so much, Roosevelt. I'm glad it's. And I think we do get texts too. Grateful for. It's funny because when people text, sometimes they have a nitpick or something, but they do also compliment other listeners who call in with a perspective. So, and I've gotten some from you for you as well.
Oh, thank you very much.
Of course.
I'm not the best person to speak, but so many things that come to my mind at the same time that I absorb during the course of the day, I want to, contribute.
Well, thank you for that. Have a great weekend, Roosevelt. Be well.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye. I'll take the calls when we come back on WCPT 820 Heartland Signal.
Hey there, it's your guy Warren Price from European and U.S. Collision Repair, a division of Technicraft Body Shops. We specialize in automobile and truck repair as well as normal automobile maintenance. With our highly skilled technicians and environmentally friendly materials, we strive for quality. Call 773-248-1200, that's 773-248-1200, or EuropeanUS.com.
Patty Vasquez is taking your calls now at 773-763-9278. Driving it home with Patty Vasquez now on WCPT 820.
Thank you so much for joining us as we drive it home. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and so thrilled that you're here. Wanted to get to some of our calls. We got Dave from Hoffman Estates. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind?
Hey, Patty, I'm the Ken Singer, he suggested that, like as Orwell said to Mike Johnson, but he's suggesting that he should make a deal on aid to Ukraine to save his speakership as a threat of a motion to vacate loomed over his head today. So he's saying that that way he could get Democrat votes to save him.
Yeah, I mean, but that's part of why I'm guessing the Republicans would then move swift. I mean, that's a tough negotiation, right, to get the Democrats. If we have a Ukraine package, will you vote to keep Speaker Johnson in his seat? That's a tough call, man. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because all they got right now is where they have that excess money of like $300,000 from some of the other things that you can send, and that's out of this, what, $1.6 billion or whatever for the whole, if they make the deal. I think, did they make that deal yet to save the government again for another 3 months or so?
Right. Yeah. Again, continuing resolution, I believe, is what it is. But I think.
Yeah. Already kicked the can.
Yes.
Yeah. The can's going to be pretty flat by now already, but as many times as they've kicked it.
Well, and what it seems to me is that they keep doing the bare minimum, right, to keep things going. And part of that is not going to cut it for when it comes to Ukraine, aid to Gaza, all the things that we're trying to accomplish and be meaningful partners in.
Right. And with Trump, do you think when the eclipse comes, he's going to, on April 8th, that he's going to look up at it again without glasses?
I don't know. Because no one will be, maybe his fans will be looking at him, his cult will be looking at him, but he doesn't have the prestige of doing that from the balcony of the White House, from the Oval Office, right? That was where he did it last time. Looked directly into the eclipse. He missed that day of school. I mean, I feel like we all got that instructions at some point in grade school when we had our shoebox and there was going to be an eclipse and you're going to see that was why we made the shoebox, was that we're not supposed to look directly at the sun, right? That was the point.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. And then so you get to some other vibes. My wife, Bob, showed me this this comment someone had made about with Trump, a new nickname. You call him a vino. Billionaire in name only.
Right. I've heard that circulating. Bino. Billionaire.
Yeah.
Well, but that was kind of the speculation. And then you have all these, of course, the cultists who are like, oh, you don't get how wealth works. But what we're learning is basically rich people who seem like they're wealthy and can borrow a lot of money, be in debt. And then just again, I don't know how. If you carry that much debt and have that much invested in real estate, like there should be something where like, well, then you don't get to have a private jet and you don't get to, own a golf course. Like there should be some, like, these are the limits we need to have at some point.
Yeah. Well, that's like that taking of the properties that, we had a friend back when he was the president. Remember, he wanted to, do the G7 or so over at the Doral, his property in Florida.
Right.
And a friend from there, that thing was a dump, the Doral.
Right.
That had cockroaches in it, and you name it. So, but, apparently if he does end up losing the rights and that to that building in Chicago with the Trump thing, you think to get the letters off?
Yes,
please.
To get
those letters off, they can do like that, the end of World War II, and just have some mild explosives and boom, 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 blow those his name off.
I don't know if we want to blow anything up, but I certainly think that taking Trump off, would be nice.
The real mild ones to blow off to make it look like when they exploded the Nazi symbol there in Germany at the airport. So, just a little weird thing. Anyway, let me get off.
All right, thanks. Thanks, Dave. Have a great weekend.
All right.
Thank you. And we'll do that. Maybe Paul has some answers about the budget. It sounds like you're calling to give us a little insight. Paul from Seattle, host of Kitchen Table Progressive, Sunday nights at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, thanks, Eddie. I don't know how wealth works either, and neither do any MAGAs who are smoking their Marlboros and drinking their Bud Light and their fried bologna sandwiches. They don't know how wealth works either. They
Which are all reasonable ways to to say. Maybe not a lot of it, but your occasional fried bologna sandwich, your occasional say.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Bud Light.
Yep.
Marlboro. Yeah. But they know how Fox News has told them that wealth works, and it works how by this guy raids the coffers of the RNC, because it's unbelievable. It's sick. But I had to call because most people don't know this, but we haven't had a federal budget since 2008. George W. Bush was the last president to sign a federal budget into law when we had a Democratic Congress. Yeah, I mean, and everyone will remember, here's the evidence. Remember, Barack Obama said, give me a budget or give me 10% cuts across the board. That was the sequester that we lived under for the whole Obama presidency. And John Boehner said, I got 98% of what I wanted. And a glass of a bottle of Merlot and a box of cigars to boot. So here's the reason that Republicans, whenever a Democrat is in office, even if the budget, the president submits the budget, even if the House passes it, if the Democratic House, they filibuster it in the Senate. And the reason they do it is because if you have a budget, that's a law that describes revenues and expenditures. Well, then you can't play this hold up hostage game that they're doing now with the debt ceiling and you can't play that game because the budget is a law.
Right.
So they keep doing that, and that's how they accomplish their political goals, because they can't win in the marketplace, the free marketplace of ideas.
Yes,
so they have to play this hostage game. And then the other thing is, when they have a Republican president like Trump, why don't they have a budget then? Well, because then you can't give huge tax cuts, because it's a law that says you got to have revenues and expenditure. You can't give away trillions of dollars.
Right.
That's their game. But people don't realize this. That's their game, is to hold you up for bread when it's a Democratic president and to give away the Treasury when they're in office. And that's why Trump contributed a third of the national debt was under Donald Trump. I mean, remember after this started in the Reagan era. Remember Lloyd Benson in a debate with Dan Corbett. I can give you the illusion of wealth. Just give me a credit card. He said that's the illusion of wealth that the Reagan administration did. And you're no Jack Kennedy. Jack Kennedy was a friend of mine, and you're no Jack Kennedy.
Yes, I do remember that. By the way, you bring up an interesting point. The other thing is, this idea that they actually have, tangible wealth. It is the appearance of wealth. And this is something that's being taught on social media a lot, too. Like, basically, get a good credit line, borrow money, invest it in this, and then pay off your minimum. It is creating people who are that sort of seeking and pursuing the trappings of wealth are falling deeper into debt because they believe that they can live like someone like Trump.
Yeah.
It's all a shell game.
You know what I noticed is that I noticed this. Oh, it's back in the 80s. Remember the SNL scandal, the savings and loan, that whole thing?
Right.
When all these savings and loans went bankrupt. What I realized then was you don't have to have money. You just have to be associated with the absolute value of a lot of money, whether it's a big negative or a big positive. And a lot of times it's a big negative. In other words, if you've been associated with a huge amount of loss, somehow you still get enough money to day-to-day it, to live on and spend, $75,000 a year on a bad hairdo and an orange tan. But I was down in Florida visiting a friend of mine, and she lived in Fort Lauderdale, and we went over to she worked at a bank there, and we went walking on the beach, and there's this huge condo building that was right, yards from the beach. And she told me that there was this guy who lived in that building he was the president of this bank that just went belly up. He's got a $3.4 million condo. This is in the 80s on top of this. And I'm like, he should be bust.
Right.
No, he's still there. I mean, he's lost everybody's money and he's still living high off the hog. And I just went, that's amazing.
I agree. Every time I think about in the 90s and the 2000s, mostly in the 2000s, remember people were buying houses that were way outside of their. I remember my mom was told by a mortgage broker that, based on your credit history, you could take out a loan for $750,000. And it's like just because you can doesn't mean you should. And perhaps we shouldn't be encouraging this. And then we had the housing bubble of 2008. People were upside down all over the place because they believed that if they qualified for the loan, that they, I guess they figured it would all work itself out. And I'm getting stressed out, Paul. Money makes me crazy.
I know. I have a very, very high credit score. It's like only 13 points to the top. And people tell me, you can buy anything. I said, yes, I had any money. Yeah,
right.
But,
yeah.
But they'll give you the money. I'm like, no.
You're not giving me the money. Right.
You're not giving me the money. No, it's and people just fall for that. No, I pay off my credit card, not every month. In fact, I take David Hochberg's advice. I pay off my credit card every week.
Yes. Every Friday. Every Friday. He gave me that advice too.
Right.
Yep.
Yep.
And I may not pay the whole thing off. I pay toward it. And so in the hopes of paying it off by the end of the month.
Yeah. Yep. Well, okay. That's fine. It's just amazing that the debt and the whole thing is for the Republicans are working for the wealthy. They don't want it. And they talk about the American family has to live on a budget, which they don't. The American family is about take the most of the American families as the examples of a good, financial planning. But they just say that when Democrats are in office.
Right.
Oh, the debt, look at the debt and our children. But then when they get in there, they just heap the tax cuts for the rich. They heap debt. And honestly, the economic growth under Democratic presidencies, Democratic administrations is almost twice that much as under Republicans.
Right.
It's been that way. It's been that way for quite a few years.
But the problem is, these are complicated things, and getting that on a mailer or in a social, like even in a social media, when we're explaining, we're losing. It's the, you know, that's why the culture wars work, because it makes people afraid or angry, and it's hard to say, well, here's how it works. You know what I mean? Like that's where we get into the weeds, unfortunately. I've got to run to the break, Paul. Yep.
Yeah, sure. Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Tune in on Sunday night, 6 o'clock, with Paul from Seattle with the Kitchen Table Progressives. More in a moment on WCPT 820, Heartland Signal.
You're listening to Driving It Home with Patty Vasquez.
In your communities, in Chicago.
On WCPT 820.
We're so happy to have you join us for a little bit of a snowy evening here in the Midwest. I know a lot of states along in the north are getting walloped with snow. Let's get back to our calls. By the way, I forgot to mention that it is First Timer Friday. So if you've never called before, we have some great gift cards to give away. We have some guests coming up, but you can still call in. And if I don't get a chance to get to you, we would love to hear from you. You don't have to chime in on any topic. If you get nervous, I just want to say hi. Maybe I'll ask how long you've listened to WCPT. Maybe how you found us, and just some of those things. So that's why I'm wondering, Joe from Chicago, you calling to say hi? Hey, Joe.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, good. I'm just actually calling just to say hi, and I've been a long-time listener.
Thank you. How long, and this is your first time calling, yes?
Yes.
Excellent. The bell is not to say that you're done. Just ding, 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 you win a gift card. I've got some good gift cards. How long have you been listening to WCPT?
Since Norm was on. You remember Norm?
Yeah, Norman Goldman. I love Course.
And I remember listening to you for the first time. I'm like, no way is this shit lasting 1 hour. No way. You've got to have longer than that.
I got too much to say. It's why I talk so fast. I have so many things to say. We had to spread it out over 2 hours. Where'd you grow up, Joe?
Around here. I went to St. Pat's.
Okay. All right.
Around here. I live right by the station.
I kind of figured you meant Opa on the northwest side, over by here. Well, I hope to see if you get a chance to come by the Jefferson Park Sunday Markets. I'd love to meet you. And we're going to start up every second and fourth Monday of the second and fourth Sunday of the month soon. So if you see me in the neighborhood with the baseball hat and pigtails, say hi. All right.
I will.
All right.
Thank you.
Of course. Hang on the line, and Paul will get your information, and we'll get a gift card out for you, because we have some great gift cards from Gindo Spice of Life Hot Sauce, Brown Sugar Bakery, Crave Brothers Farmstead Cheese of Waterloo, Sam's Famous Salsa, Timeless Toys in Chicago, Rollicking Buckaroo Pepper Jam and Seasoning Blends, Hungry Monkey Baking Company, Uwe Kitchen and Bar, and, of course, BootTights.com. So let me put Joe on hold, and we'll get your information and send out a gift card. Let's get to Jim has been on hold for half an hour. Jim, thanks for being patient. What's on your mind, my friend?
To my calculations, Patty, the presidential candidate for the Republican Party has 65 hours to come into New York and explain how he's going to pay the $500 million. Now, if I was advising him, mm-hmm. I would say, don't fly your plane there, because Letitia James might confiscate it. He better fly commercial in New York. That's my point. They might grab his plane there in New York.
But, good point.
Anyway, somebody's going to pony up the money for this. Or somehow, I don't know how it's going to be.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. Everybody will be sitting down there. Anticipating how this is going to work out. I have no idea. But they should have made him Speaker of the House. That's where they lost the Republican.
Well, hey, that's not off the table. Don't remember.
I know that. But remember, they could have had him out every day. He could have said how terrible the United States is, how we're sliding into some kind of abyss, that the end of the world is coming. He could have said it if he was going to articulate it.
Yep.
But again, I've heard psychiatrists again and again say that his sentence structure has an onset of dementia. And I think as we go into the summer, you'll see more and more of it as it goes along. But I'm very confident, but you can't be overconfident because you never know. I don't know where the supports are going to come from, Patty. But,
exactly.
Who knows? Unless they've got some kind of a scheme where they and fix this election. I can't see how he can win. Anyway, Patty, have a great weekend. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. Have a good one. And Myron in Lansing. Hey, Myron, how you doing today? Is it your first time calling?
Because I don't know if hello.
Hey.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
Excellent. We have another winner for First Timer Friday. Excellent. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the the American Connectivity Program. They're defunding it. You know, they give you a discount on the internet.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, my internet, it used to be like $10. Now it's like $60 a month.
Oh, my gosh.
You know? Yeah, they stopped funding it in April. They're going to stop funding. The government stopped funding it. And that's
to help folks who are in areas that are underserved with the broadband reach, right?
No, yeah. Well, I don't know the technology. Yeah, but yeah. Internet, yeah. And it's ACP, the American Connectivity Program. You know, it's kind of like when they electrified rural areas, you know, the government
with
paid
TVP,
for it.
Sure.
Yeah.
The Tennessee Valley Project.
Yeah, what's the
Yep.
Right. Right. This is similar with the internet that they cut it off. So, you know, now I can't afford to have internet anymore.
Oh, yeah. FCC. I'm seeing it right now. There was a news story that the
ACP,
funding has run dry. The FCC is going to wind down the subsidy. There are some options there at CNET.com. I don't know if this is going to help or not, and I don't see it loading. But let me see if I can get some more information.
Yeah, I know. There was
a $30 monthly discount. And it's going to end, next month. So, and Biden requested an additional $6 billion from Congress, but they've not.
Congress can't even fund itself.
They didn't bring it to a vote. Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, hopefully, that's awful. I'm so sorry to hear that.
I'm sure it affects a lot of people. You know,
Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you need the internet just to get a job or just, you know.
Yeah, this is entirely, it sounds like it's entirely the holdup in Congress is defunding that. Really sorry to hear that.
Yeah, they're fighting over.
But you know, ask your provider, if you qualify for a discount in your household, okay? Like they do have some programs, AT&T, Cox.
Yeah, I did. It's what I'm saying, that the holdup is the Congress. They're not funding it.
They don't care.
People shouldn't have certain things.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Myron. Well, I wish you the best. Hold on the line. At least the least I could do is at least send you a gift card. And unfortunately, it's not for broadband, but we'll get you something. Okay.
Thanks,
Myron. Hold on the line.
I'll take it, whatever.
Yeah, we can send that to you. We'll hold on the line, and Paul will talk to you in a second. Let me take a break here. And coming up after the news, we're going to have a conversation with the Environmental Integrity Project coming up in just a moment. And I'm late for the news. Sorry, everybody, but Alexandra's going to join us in a moment.
Driving it home with Patty Vasquez, Patty Vasquez.
From global conflicts to greenhouse gases, the folks refusing to wear masks says, and politicians getting caught grabbing asses says, she's driving it home with Patty Vasquez.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight. It is just a weird weather day in Chicago, and I'm sure we're having similar weather up at where our friends are listening in Minneapolis, St. Paul on KTNF 950 AM. Welcome to Driving It Home. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. And let's go ahead and get started. We have a guest on the line. Joining us right now is the research manager for the Environmental Integrity Project, Alexandra Shakevich joins us. Hey, Alexandra, how are you doing today?
Hi, Patty. Thanks for having me.
I'm so thrilled because, you know, we have a lot of conversations on this station, on my show. Part of our mission is to continue to highlight what is going on with our environment, with pollution, with climate change. And we talk a lot about different items that are just so bad for the environment, whether it's styrofoam or single-use plastic. And I also have a bone to pick with legislators who keep giving subsidies to big corporations. And I feel like this conversation blends the two. So tell us a little bit about the Environmental Integrity Project.
We just released a new report. It's called Feeding the Plastics Industrial Complex. And our research found that billions of dollars in taxpayer subsidies are helping to fund dangerous and often illegal pollution in communities of color with little consequence. We examined 50 plants that were built or expanded in the U.S. since 2012, and we found that two-thirds of them received taxpayer subsidies totaling around $9 billion, which is just a staggering figure. Yet 84% of them violated their air pollution control permits in the past 3 years, and none of these plants were forced to give up any of their subsidies for breaking environmental laws.
And that's like, you know, I spent some time covering Springfield, and it used to make me nuts watching legislators argue for a big company to get a huge subsidy. And look, we saw what like Foxconn is an example in the Midwest. Illinois desperately wanted a lot of legislators wanted Foxconn, and they were going to subsidize it with, you know, tens of millions of dollars. It ended up being in Wisconsin. It didn't follow through on the employment that they had promised, and it did end up contributing to pollution in the area. And what kind of accountability measures are built into this sort of offers and legislation? Is there any? I mean, it sounds like there is some, but there's no teeth to it, right?
Well, our research shows that in order to get these subsidies, oftentimes these companies make lots of claims. However, there's very little accountability, and really oftentimes the only thing these companies really have to follow through on are job claims. So they promise to create a certain amount of jobs, and in return, governments offer them millions and millions of dollars of taxpayer subsidies. But in terms of any environmental accountability, there's no teeth there.
Wow. And they often, most of these, about what's the percentage of companies that say there's not going to be any harm to the environment, it's not going to disrupt the community, the water, the air? About how often do they actually end up doing the opposite?
Well, our report found that two-thirds of the companies of the 50 plants that we looked at received taxpayer subsidies. And all of these companies, in order to win taxpayer support, they do make public promises. They promise to protect public health and the environment, and they promise to be good environmental stewards. But what we found is that, you know, once those subsidies were issued and their permits were in hand, that they often failed to keep those promises by repeatedly releasing illegal pollution during malfunctions, breakdowns, and these quote-unquote pollution events that release dangerous chemicals into the environment and into nearby communities.
And you have some recommendations on how to, because there are, this is happening all over the country, from Louisiana to Pennsylvania, Texas, are some of the highlights that you have in this report that I received in the press release, whether it's air pollution and then not only are these places contributing to pollution in the area, there are more that are supposed to be built soon. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, the build-out of the plastics industry is really tremendous. We've seen huge growth over the past few decades, and there's a lot of growth on the horizon. Our report highlights 10 new plants that have been proposed, as well as 23 expansion projects at existing facilities. So the build-out is really staggering.
And you also have recommendations. Now, are there any legislators that you work with that will champion the recommendations that you are proposing? And first, let's talk about some of the proposals that you have, the recommendations that you've laid out for regulators.
Absolutely. So, as I mentioned, none of the cases that we examined did plastics companies have to give up any of their public subsidies. And we think that's wrong. What we're advocating for is that in the future, taxpayer subsidies be tied to environmental compliance. Now, if companies can't obey the law, they should not be rewarded with taxpayer money. And if they can't comply, they should be forced to reimburse taxpayers when they fail to abide by pollution control laws. We're also advocating for other reforms, including strict permit limits and, in some cases, outright denials for plants that make ingredients that are primarily used in single-use disposable throwaway plastics. You know, a lot of these products, they end up as litter. They pollute our waterways. And in fact, the pollution issue is so immense and so ubiquitous that microplastics have been found in human blood and in breast milk. I just want to stop and say that it's important to mention that plastics do have some very important applications. you know, medical equipment, technologies. But the truth is that we have enough capacity currently operating or under construction to meet demand for these critical plastic products. What we should not be doing is using taxpayer support to essentially subsidize litter.
And yeah, the long-term effects of this, we are already seeing the impact, and we just don't actually know going forward, you know, whether it's the wildlife or, as you mentioned, if it's in breast milk, how it's going to have an impact on the development of, you know, of little organs. What can we do? I was going to ask you if there's a legislator or there are those that are already in a position of power that can carry this and champion the cause of holding these corporations accountable. Have you built that kind of relationship, or is that something that you're seeking?
So we do not work directly with legislators, but I would absolutely encourage your listeners to reach out to their elected representatives. You know, ultimately, I think the onus should be on industry and on policymakers to craft environmental laws that encourage industry to change their ways, you know, to enforce existing environmental pollution standards, as well as to impose stricter limits on these companies, and to, you know, to issue stringent penalties. Oftentimes what we see is that, you know, it's much cheaper for a company to pay a fine than it is to install a pollution control. And, you know, that's just not right. We really need to make sure that these penalties are proportionate to the damage that these companies are causing. And as consumers, you know, the entire burden shouldn't be on us. A lot of times we have very few options. You know, I can't go to the grocery store and buy carrots or celery that's not wrapped in plastic. So again, really, it's on industry and it's on policymakers. And so I think we really need to encourage them to step up and to regulate the industry moving forward.
And the argument against regulation, of course, is always, well, that stymies capitalism, that's an undue burden, and that, you know, we're going to lose jobs, and it's cumbersome. Isn't that generally the argument, the pushback against regulations and penalties?
Yeah, you know, everyone hates regulation, it seems. But, you know, what we know is that these regulations can be really beneficial for the communities living next door to these plants, the majority of which are communities of color. You know, our research found that over close to 600,000 people live next door within 3 miles of the 50 plastics plants that we looked at, and 2/3 of them are communities of color. And that's not a new trend. You know, these companies, again, they promise to make jobs, and that's not something that we really dug into in our report, but there have been some really important investigations. For example, the Houston Chronicle found that at least 30 companies in Texas had failed to meet job creation promises after receiving subsidies. Another organization, Together Louisiana, found that Louisiana taxpayers were paying over $500,000 per job in order to create these private sector jobs. And again, this is money that, you know, we're losing from our school districts, from, you know, money that can be spent to improve basic public services in the communities that really need it most.
Right. It's if we could get this all to work, the companies can make money, we can be safe, we can support the programs that are important in our communities. This is one of those things you're like, okay, let's cut through all the BS and do the right thing. And I know you've been at this for quite a while. How do you maintain your energy? Because this is your career, you know, with environmental studies and I want folks, if you can visit oilandgaswatch.org as well, folks, to learn more about some of the work that Alexandra does. But honestly, Alexandra, do you ever find your point, like yourself at a point where like, okay, I got to go for a walk in the woods to clear my head with all the complications that these people throw in the way of progress for helping people?
It can certainly be challenging, especially during an election cycle, or, you know, when you hear politicians kind of recycling some of the same arguments that you, you know, pointed out just a few moments ago. But, you know, we just got to keep going and, you know, stand up for what's right and, you know, try to create change.
So know, folks, know that there are people like Alexandra who are doing the hard work, that are trying to elevate these messages and alarm bells, and be engaged. So where else should folks go? Oilandgaswatch.org. Do you have any other resources where people can learn more?
Well, they can certainly visit our website at environmentalintegrity.org and check out some of the great resources that we provide. And as you pointed out, oilandgaswatch.org, that is a website that tracks new and expanding oil, gas, and petrochemical infrastructure. And so, you know, the goal is to give folks a proper heads up when a facility is expanding or a new facility is being proposed in their backyard. And we provide access to thousands of permit documents and provide avenues for folks to get engaged in the public participation process. They have a voice in what is being built in their community.
And I think one of the reasons I asked you, like, how do you keep going, I think is also really kind of asking how, I mean, I'm asking the audience more, like, what are we doing and what can we do? Because I think, Alexandra, and maybe you've run into this, where people, because there is so much, like, the temperatures have always been changing, or, you know, basically there are people who feel like the planet is here and God gave them the planet to use it all up till it's all, you know, unusable, I guess, unlivable almost. And so some people get the attitude of like, well, you know, it's kind of too far out of, it's too far gone now. There's not much we can do to rein it in. There is hope to make things better, Alexandra. I think that's the message we need to leave with folks, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. I think that's right, Patty.
Yeah. And again, stay involved, stay engaged, visit oilandgaswatch.org and environmentalintegrity.org. Is that right? I want to make sure I have the websites right.
That's right.
Excellent.
That's right.
Please don't hesitate to reach out. Tell Steve Becker that we would love to have you back if you want to check in and you know, alert us to more information or action that we can take. Because again, we do have a commitment to our planet and to each other. And the work that you do is vital to that. Thank you so much, Alexandra.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye. Let's take a break here. I've got some phone calls lined up. We'll connect in just a moment on WCPT 820 Heartland Signal and KTNF 950 AM in Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Hi, folks. I'm Kirk Bankstead from the Minocqua Brewing Company, and I sell progressive beer like Biden beer, which is inoffensive and not bitter, and Extinct Elephant, a moderate red ale. Because, you know, those moderate Republicans seem to be going the way of the dodo. A percentage of the proceeds of each can sold goes to keep Wisconsin blue and drive the MAGA cult out of our state. Enjoy a great craft beer and help your dysfunctional neighbor to the north get its democracy back. To keep track of the good trouble we're making in Wisconsin and where to buy our beer, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and our website, MinocquaBrewingCompany.com.
And drink responsibly.
Patty Vasquez is taking your calls now at 773-763-9278. Driving it home with Patty Vasquez now on WCPT 820.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us as we drive it home. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and we are taking your phone calls. Eve has been very patient because Eve was on a hold since before the news at 6 o'clock. So thank you so much for hanging in there, Eve. What's on your mind tonight, my friend?
Can we get rid of guns? I mean, it's ridiculous. 40 people in Moscow are shot already.
This is a story that someone just texted me that the folks are aware there was a shooting in Moscow at a concert. Over 40 people have been killed. And Eve, I wish there was something we could do. This is a little bit of the conversation I was having with Alexandra of like, it's hard to figure out and wrap your mind around how we regain some sort of control over the hazards in our environment. And I feel the same way about guns. There's so many, it's so prolific in our society in the United States, but we know that regulations have worked and look, we've been afraid to have the conversations for such a long time. You know, people are like, oh, don't say gun control because people will, you know, they'll shut down. They don't want to hear you. They're very protective of their guns. I don't know, Eve. It's heartbreaking. Have you experienced someone in your that's close to you from gun violence? Have you lost someone or had someone injured or yourself?
No, nobody.
It's just heartbreaking, right?
Definitely.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. Where are you, what part of Chicago are you calling from, Eve?
Budlong Woods.
What was that? Budlong Woods?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, you called last week. You called after you voted, yes?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. I was telling your committee woman, Maggie O'Keefe, that I had spoken to you. If, you know, that might be some place to start to feel like, you know, you have an impact on what's happening. Your committee woman is very proactive. It's going to be very engaged in this election season. She's always looking for people who do phone calls and go door knocking or write posts, you know, do texting and things like that. It might help to feel like you're, you know, able to have these conversations with people and with electeds, right? To let them know how important important this is to you. But yeah, I'm so sorry that I feel like I apologize to my son that we didn't do enough. But there has been for over, I would say, since the 70s, 80s, a consolidation of people who are single issue voters, right? And so they feel, right, for abortion or for guns has been a driving issue for a lot of those folks. And then all the other cultural things have been, I think, convenient for the GOP. But those two issues drove out a lot of voters, and they rate electeds or people who are running for office. It'll say, like, the NRA rates this person as an F because they believe in gun control, or they rate this person as an A because they think that everybody should have a gun. They should have it duct taped to their hand with as many bullets as possible. So there's sort of that range, and people like you and me are in the middle going, okay, we just want to be safe, and we want to not be worried about being in a crowd or
We definitely need peace in the world.
Yeah, we do. We do, Eve. Yeah, so you know what? If you can go to my Facebook page, and if you like my Facebook page, the Patty Vasquez Show page, you can scroll back to Maggie O'Keefe is on my page. She appeared on the show on Tuesday, and find out more information about her office, because she does a great job with folks, getting them organized and involved. And it really does help, Eve, to feel like that you can put some of that energy and concern into encouraging people to vote.
Right.
Sounds good. Sound good? Did we sign you up for a gift card last week, didn't we?
Nope.
Oh, we didn't?
I didn't get a gift card.
Oh, no. Didn't you call last Friday?
I called, but I never got a gift card.
Oh, no. But we got you signed up for it. I know that Jerry's working on it. It might take a couple of days, okay?
Okay.
Thank you, Eve. And call back if you don't get something within the next month or so, okay?
Okay.
All right. Have a great weekend. Thanks for calling.
You too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I think that goes for everybody. I was thinking about this during Marge's show about, we have to get organized. And she was talking about folks going up to Wisconsin. We're going to talk to Lorenzo Santos, the candidate for the first congressional district, which is the southern part of Wisconsin. And I agree. Marge, the work that they do with Indivisible is so crucial and so engaged. And I think I mentioned this earlier this week. I usually get political mail, and I generally recycle it unless it's a mailer that catches my attention. And if I ever want to run for office or, consult somebody on the kind of messaging that is useful and impactful, I usually recycle things, including things that are envelopes, like from a campaign. Like, I'll get things from Jan Schakowsky and from Quigley and Durbin. I'm on your team. Basically, I look at that kind of mail. Like, yeah, I got it. But this time I decided, because I often get letters from the Biden-Harris campaign as well. And again, I'm like, if I can go to Act Blue if I want to contribute. I wish you wouldn't waste the paper or the postage. So I thought this time, since they are spending the money on it, I should take a look. And it is somewhat helpful, because one of the things that they put in the letter this time was a political map. And maybe they have before, but I recycled it. But there's a political map that shows you some of the seats that are flippable. So in Wisconsin, I know that they're opening field offices. So they have a little symbol for boots on the ground there. They're showing you, like, the places that are flip battleground states that went for Trump in 2020 but are flippable now. They also have information about where there are gubernatorial races that are in their sights. So at any rate, it's just a reminder from I'm a visual person. I'm auditory and visual, and it helps me to be focused. We've got work to do in Wisconsin and Michigan. There is actually a race in Indiana that it looks like they're working on as well. But you know what? Let's take a break here and check in with our candidate in Wisconsin, Lorenzo Santos, the candidate for the 1st Congressional District of Wisconsin, joins us in just a moment on WCPT 820 Heartland Signal and KTNF 950 AM Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Hey there, it's your guy Warren Price from European and U.S. Collision Repair, a division of Technicraft Body Shops. We specialize in automobile and truck repair as well as normal automobile maintenance. With our highly skilled technicians and environmentally friendly materials, we strive for quality. Call 773-248-1200. That's 773-248-1200 or EuropeanUS.com.
You're listening to Driving It Home with Patty Vasquez on WCPT 820.
I am looking at my political action map from the Biden-Harris campaign, and there's a race in southern Wisconsin that the Democrats hopefully will get involved in. We have Lorenzo Santos, who's candidate for the 1st Congressional District, on the line with us. Hey, Lorenzo, how are you doing on this wintry spring evening?
Hey, Patty, great. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. You know, I know that there are warmer days behind us, which means there are warmer days ahead of us.
So
remind folks about this campaign that you're running in southern Wisconsin and how we can help, because I think that we need to get involved and give you all the support we can.
Yeah, this race is all too important because it's one of the races that, you know, in a purple district is going to make sure that we not only flip this seat, but also flip the entire U.S. House of Representatives. What we're seeing right now is folks are, you know, in the GOP are just tired of all the madness that they're seeing. We're seeing Representative Gallagher is going to get out, you know, within next month. We've got another rep out in Colorado, choosing to do the same thing. So the margin for how many votes that, you know, the GOP can afford to lose is becoming smaller and smaller. And we're getting closer to that Democratic majority even before the November election. So that's why it's so important that we make sure that we flip this seat in the first and the third in Wisconsin here. And for us, for the first district, that's going to be southeast Wisconsin. That's a very large district, about 729,000 people. You know, we have about five different counties that make up our district. And, you know, my campaign manager, my campaign, my team, we're making sure that we are visiting them all. We're getting out, you know, we're getting out the information that people need to know that this is a very flippable seat, and we just need folks to volunteer. We're ramping up our field organizing as well, and we're going to make sure that we are hitting the phones harder than ever before going into the spring.
And I know that they announced that the Democratic Party was going to be opening field offices, and of course they're going to wait until they find out who the candidate is on the ballot. So how many candidates are on the primary ballot for the Democratic side?
Right now there's two. There's myself and my opponent,
uh-huh.
And we're you know going to be in a primary if we both stay in this race until August 13th.
August 13th.
So it's a very late primary.
Ooh, yikes!
But that's why we have to turn up the heat. We have to make sure that we are showing the first district who their choices are. And, you know, we're just going to keep both running the best campaigns we can to give the first district the best choice that they have to go up against Brian Stout so we can beat the guy and give Joe Biden the Democratic majority he needs to get things done.
Let's let folks know a little bit about your background, because we do have listeners. I know when we were in Kenosha at the Wyndham, at the Kenosha Comedy Club at the Wyndham Hotel, there were folks who I know listen to the show. So we've got friends in southern Wisconsin. We reach all the way up to actually, I've heard the show up in Wisconsin Dells. But I want to, you know, make sure people know who you are and how you got involved in running for community service, I mean, for public office. So where did you grow up, my friend?
I grew up all over. You know, I am a Navy brat. You know, I have six siblings. We traveled around. Racine is the first place I've lived my adult life the longest right now. And, you know, I moved here in 2018. I was a sales manager for a major manufacturing company. And I had 12 states that I would travel to. I'd be on the road 3 days a week. And so that was my day job. That's what I started doing. And then after I left that job, I pivoted into, you know, I was getting my master's in Homeland Security, and then I wanted to get into emergency management. So that's what I also do now. And that's also kind of what gives me, you know, the background to understand what's happening with, you know, we're looking at this immigration situation and whether we're talking about, you know, TikTok and things like that. It gives me the background to understand really what those issues are and to make, you know, the good judgment calls that we need.
That's that's so much of what we need in a position like a congressional seat, because there's just there's so many complicated issues, and all we see right now on the news are a bunch of folks acting like children. I mean, you're focusing on running and the mechanics of that, and meeting people and raising money and messaging. Do you sometimes watch the madness and go, well, someone's got to get in? They can't all be this crazy. But does it look that way?
I will say this. It's more than just craziness for me. It's the fact that we watch these folks, and I think that most of them aren't. But, they take an oath, and they're not upholding that oath.
Right.
They know that a lot of the stuff that's happening is wrong.
Yeah.
They know it, and they'll say it in private. And this is Brian's style as well. They know that what Donald Trump says, a lot of that stuff is just unhinged and it should not be supported. And, going along with it is just as bad as a full-throated, support of it. Not opposing those statements that he makes, about immigrants not even being human, and about the January 6th, rioters being unfairly treated and doing his weird salute to them. Mm. I mean, if you think that the Republican GOP majority, if they get a majority, if you think they're not going to just go along with every single thing Donald Trump wants, if you think they're going to stand up against him at all, you have not been watching. You have not been paying attention. We cannot allow him to get back into office, and we cannot allow him to have certainly a GOP majority who will never stand up to anything he says or does, because they won't do it when he's just a candidate. They will certainly not do it if he's ever president of the United States again.
I agree. It is. There are moments where I have a little bit of despair. I don't lean into it. I don't let it absorb me, because it is hard when you know that there are so many people who just. They're not aware, or they want it to be as nasty as he is saying it will be. The Republicans came out with conversations about a federal abortion ban, which I know is something that you talk a lot about. Do you think that's an issue with the folks that you're talking about that will drive folks out to the voting booth? Because we had a primary in Chicago. I don't know if you saw our numbers. It was not great.
Yeah.
And I don't know if part of that apathy was because, we already know who the candidates for president are going to be. And so the local races weren't as important to them. We have abortion pretty much well protected in Illinois. In Wisconsin, you guys have a big battle there for women's reproductive health. What's your sense of folks being mobilized by that issue?
Yeah, here's the interesting thing about that. That is absolutely getting folks out. But what we have to understand, unfortunately, on the GOP side is, even though Donald Trump, came out in support and wants all the credit in the world for having Roe overturned, even though Brian Stile called it a victory, people are not holding that against them. Even their own voters who are for reproductive rights don't hold it against them. So there's this kind of cognitive dissonance, regarding the fact that they're trying to get these people into power who are essentially going to disenfranchise them and ensure that they do not have bodily autonomy. That is sobering for me, but I think what we have to do is we have to make sure that we get our own side out as much as possible. And I can tell you that that is certainly happening on the Democratic side, but we need to make sure that we are also reaching independents, folks that do not necessarily identify with either side, either major party. We need to be talking to them, and we need to explain why the Democratic Party is the party that is the party that's going to ensure that, the right to choose is protected and preserved going forward.
What kind of conversations are you having with folks about? I know that employment numbers came out for Wisconsin, and in a positive sense, and I think some of the work of Governor Evers? I always forget.
Yeah.
I always forget if it's Evers or Evers. But a lot of the work that he's done we've seen results with Dems showing up for voting for the Supreme Court, which is also going to be important for the long-term positive results for Wisconsinites. What are you hearing in regards to the folks in your communities when it comes to the economy and their employment and wages and issues like that that are important to labor?
Yeah, the thing is, the economy is this massive shift that takes a while to shift. Mm-hmm. And even if, at the federal level, You know, the fundamentals look good, and even though, you know, the Fed is saying, oh, we're gonna ease interest rates. You know, for the average American, what does that mean? You know, they need to go to the grocery store and see that the price of their groceries are going down. They need to be able to go into work and have higher take home pay. You know, they need to be able to make sure that their jobs in general are paying them a fair wage, that they're safe when they go in there, and they can't just fire them, you know, arbitrarily for any reason. Like, that's what's important.
Right.
They need that kind of peace of mind. So that's what I'm fighting for. I can tell you Brian Stile doesn't even want workers to be able to unionize. He doesn't want them to be able to organize. He's on the side of the executives, who essentially think that the only thing that's important is we're making sure that their shareholders have more money in their pockets, not the workers who, you know, work day in and day out to ensure that their company even exists. So yeah. That's what I'm fighting for.
Yeah. And that's, you know, so much of what I think people respond to is they want to know that they have all the health choices and care and services that they want to have available to them. They want to have a good job that pays well and is secure and gives them the opportunity to provide for their families, you know, have enough to afford a home and stay in it. I think health care is another issue that a lot of folks talk about. And I know that I was when we were in Kenosha, we spoke to folks about access to health care in general. What are some of the things that folks in your part of Wisconsin are encountering when it comes to emergency room care, access to, you know, because a lot of in Illinois we have hospital deserts. Do you experience some of that in southern Wisconsin as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's this is the punchline here. Obamacare, you know, is going on its 14th year, and you have a presidential candidate who is deciding, Donald Trump, who thinks it's okay to try and replace Obamacare with nothing, with thin air. And we've seen this guy play this, you know, kind of tune before. He doesn't have a plan. He never has. He never will. And, you know, the folks that would be in the legislature, they're not willing to stand up to him either. So he doesn't have a plan. We have Obamacare already in place. We have the Affordable Care Act already in place that will support and continues to support millions of Americans. And not only that, we are breaking record numbers of expanding that. And we need to make sure that we are expanding health care for more Americans, because the punchline for when you talk about emergency care, a lot of these situations, a lot of these chronic illnesses that people have that a lot of these insurance companies don't seem to think that people should be supported with, a lot of them would not even be an issue if they were able to get that preventative care in the first place, and it wouldn't become a chronic issue. So we need to make sure that we are putting people on quality and affordable health care as soon as possible so that they don't even become those chronic issues.
Absolutely.
Later on.
Yeah.
And they don't need to go to the ER later.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing, is the ER has become basically the safety net for people who are uninsured or underinsured. And
right.
And that lends into another, and this isn't something that I have done enough research to understand how it can be approached legislatively, but I don't know if you've been following how many private equity firms have been buying up hospitals and basically, you know, just become entirely profit. And we know that they've become profit driven, but there's got to be some way to rein that in at some point. It can't just be like, well, that, you know, somebody goes to the emergency room and the next thing you know, it's a bill for $12,500. But then it's not really what you're being charged, because then they'll negotiate with the insurance company and with the provider. And like, what? Like, there should be some transparency in that, you know?
Well, absolutely. The Biden administration has done a lot of work to make sure that there are transparency in hospital bill costs, to make sure that you're not just being saddled with bills at the, you know, the exit of your stay, and you're being put in life-changing debt that really you don't have an ability to come out of. And really what we see in the difference between Democratic policies and Republican policies are, it's about people. You know, the Republican policies will try and make sure that insurance companies, that these, medical conglomerates, you know, that are buying up these hospitals and just trying to squeeze as much money out of them as possible, they're more focused on getting every dime they can. Democrats care about making sure that we can ensure that every American that wants quality health care has access to it.
Yeah.
And it's that simple. We need to be fighting for that. That is not too much to ask. You know, health care and being able to have health is, honestly, it's a human right. And also, if you take the party that loves to talk about how they are so pro-life, then why, when those people that, you know, are here and they're alive and they just want to be provided health care, why aren't you doing everything within your power to make sure that they have that? If you're so pro-life, explain why you fight tooth and nail to ensure that these executives and these, you know, companies that are just buying up these health care providing locations, facilities, are they're lining their pockets, but you're not doing what you can to ensure that Americans are taken care of. There's some crazy hypocrisy in there, and I don't think they even see it themselves.
No, they really don't. And education, of course, another issue that is important to folks, and we see in a way that is so shocking, you know, whether it's Wisconsin or Texas, these school voucher programs. Is there, I don't even know, I guess at the federal level, there, and I believe it started in the 80s. I remember it being an issue under Reagan, where they wanted, you know, they were, and I think it also, maybe it was the 70s because it was in response to desegregation, so that, oh, here, we want school choice, and really it meant we don't want to send our kids to school with kids of color. We don't want them to go to school with the black kids. So we'll pay for schools. And then they were like, well, you know, we should get some money for having to go somewhere else. And now it's exploded into this $1 billion industry. And Wisconsin's one of the places that has suffered extensively in your education system. Isn't that right?
Yeah, school choice, unfortunately, honestly, what it should be called is student choice. They get to choose their students, not the other way around.
Yes.
We need to make sure that we are providing students. It doesn't matter what zip code you live in. You should have a quality education. And what they are doing is they are also taking away from those public funds. So they want this choice. And again, GOP hypocrisy, let the markets do what they do. Okay, well, they come into the market and then they essentially try to compete, you know, with these public schools. But here's how they also compete. They try to take those public funds that do not belong to them. If they wanted to compete, then they wouldn't also be coming in and drying up the funds that really should only be going to public school kids. And here's the biggest thing about this is when we look at what public schools offer, we look at special needs students are going to ultimately be one of the biggest categories of student that will be left behind. And we simply cannot allow that to happen, because if you look at these voucher schools, they will choose who they want, and they will not end up choosing special needs students. And these schools will also not be providing those special programs that our children need so much to ensure that they are well-rounded, you know, the arts and things like that, that it seems the GOP doesn't want, you know, anyone to be educated in either. It just doesn't make sense. It's going to leave entire communities behind. And it's also an economic situation. If these schools close, because we have consolidations and closings right now, here's what's going to happen. Students' grades suffer because they're facing a traumatic event. And then you also have a situation where a lot of these parents aren't dropping their kids off to school. Those were community schools. The schools were close to their homes. Now, how are those kids even going to get to those schools?
Yeah.
Now they might have to take a city bus, okay? Well, some of these parents, it's a socioeconomic situation. They may not have the money to be sending their kids on the school bus every single day of the week. And if they think that's surprising, then they're not paying close enough attention. Not everyone has the ability to do that. Public school buses would have been able to get them where they needed to go. We have to be looking at this from a local lens. And this situation, it's really going to only provide for a select few students and leave a lot of the other students left behind.
It is it's such a massive problem, and thank you for shedding some of your insight and thoughts on that, because again, there's so many issues you have to be well versed in, and it sounds like you have a great handle on so many of it. Is there anything I'm leaving out that folks have come to you? I mean, because you're going to have folks that want to talk to you about guns, in Wisconsin, you know, it's a bit, they like to do some hunting there, among other things.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we're not talking about, and that's the thing, is the idea that we're coming for all of the guns, but we're not even allowed in the conversation if we're liberals, even no matter what we're planning to say, right?
Yeah, I will say that, you know, bullets do not discriminate against party. So we need to really look at this, and slugging is not a policy, and, you know, hopes and prayers is not a policy.
No.
We need to, a whole generation is counting on us to be adults and actually get things done. I take this personally when the GOP decides, especially in, you know, at the state level, they gavel in and gavel out when we have great legislators in our own state that want to bring about great legislation, and they're going to see. They are going to see what happens when people that are actually serious about passing real laws get elected, because we have fair maps finally. So this same legislature in our state that gaveled in and gaveled out when we only wanted to do what's right, to pass common sense gun safety in our state, they shrugged their shoulders. They gaveled in and gaveled out. That's not going to happen anymore. They get to retire because they didn't do a damn thing when they had the opportunity. And we're going to make sure we do that at the federal level as well. We need more Democrats that want common sense, gun safety, and we're going to get it done.
Lorenzo Santos, candidate for the 1st Congressional District of Wisconsin. That's just north of us, folks, here in Chicago, and maybe it's a little south of you, friends in Minnesota. We've got a lot of work to do. And I know you have a few events coming up this weekend. There is a meet and greet fundraiser on March 24th. That's going to be at the Cargo Coffee East, right? That's going to be from 1 till 3. There's a meet the candidates event on March 27th with, and I love that. What I love about having done that event with you guys is having met so many of these candidates. Lydia Spotswood's running for mayor, and of course Lorenzo will be there from 5 to 7 at the Union Park Tavern. That's in Kenosha. And then a town hall, and this is going to be, we can all join. If you want to show some audience support for Lorenzo, March 28th from 7 to 8, we can all log in, and I'm going to make a note, we'll put that on our calendar so we remind folks that night that once my show is over, they should switch over and watch your town hall meeting. I love it.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Of course. Of course. I look forward to coming up and doing some work with you again. Go get them, Lorenzo. Pace yourself, too. Do some meditation, whatever it is that helps you relax, because this is a long one. You have to run now like you're running for the whole thing, and you already know that. But you're doing a great job, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you, Patty.
Have a great evening. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care. We'll take a break here. We'll wrap up in just a moment on WCPT 820 Heartland Signal. Everyone go to santosforwisconsin.com, by the way. That's santosforwisconsin.com. More in a moment.
You're listening to Driving It Home with Patty Vasquez on WCPT 820.
As Joan always says when she signs off on Fridays, I encourage you to find something that makes you happy and relaxed this weekend. I was just reading a piece about forest bathing, which is something you know I already do. When I go for hikes in the forest, in the woods, I love going to our forest preserves. It might be a little chillier this weekend, but it's still good to get outside and breathe in some fresh air, or whatever it is that you do, that whether it's reading a book or listening to music, taking a walk, riding a bike, walking your dog, which leads me to something that made me really, I didn't realize how, maybe because I haven't been feeling well this week, how incredibly happy I was today. I don't know how many, I didn't mention this at all this week because it's just one of these social media moments that you get hooked on a story and you get just so invested in it. There's a woman, she's a journalist in Atlanta, and her name is Hannah Riley, and she was traveling. She was in Toronto working. She had left her dog with a friend. This is the craziest story, Paul. She left her dog with a friend. If you want to come on, I'm just wanted to let you. This is crazy. Her dog sitter, who she left the dog with for a few days in Atlanta, Georgia, she took the dog to the vet because the dog had eaten her Delta gummies. She'd eaten some weed gummies. And so she took it to the vet. The vet was about to let the dog out for a walk, but didn't put it on a leash, and the dog got away.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my God. I was so invested in this story. This has been for days. This has been since the dog got out, I think, Sunday, and they just found the dog today. But, I mean, there was like...
You found him at a Grateful Dead concert?
Right? the dog had like a catheter in, because the vet had put a catheter in. It was a whole mess. It was a little tiny little Pomeranian, like some sort of Pekingese. I don't know. It was like a little fuzzy dog. It was just a cute little dog. And like a guy almost hit it, and he stopped traffic with his truck because he almost hit it. And there was a woman like waving her hands and had a stroller. So he ran over because he thought it was their dog, gave it to them. And then that woman disappeared. But this has been on the journalist was able to get it on the news, obviously on social media, and like the next door, like neighborhood block. And finally this morning, someone messaged them and said, I think I have your dog. Your dog was on my porch. And I remembered this. Like they knew because of like social media.
That dog must have sobered up and was like, where am I?
It's So the dog is fine. The dog is back and with mommy. So Hazel was found, in case anybody else was following that story. Have a great weekend, everybody. Paul, thank you so much for everything. We are going to go live with Whiskey and a Cookie in a moment, and we hope you'll join us on the Patty Vasquez show page. And have a great weekend, everybody. Mike Crute's up next with Devil's Advocates. Super late. Sorry, Paul.